July 5th, 2016. One day past the very famous July 4th. And this is Inside Out, The Naked Truth. And we're coming to you live from the Santa Cruz Mountains in California from Lupin Lodge, where clothing is optional.
But the truth is always naked.
I'm Errol Strider.
And I'm Rochelle Alicia Strider. And we welcome you once again to our home at Lupin Lodge. We invited you over tonight for some conversation about the human condition and what to make of it, sprinkled with laughter, good music, and a few surprises.
We have two wonderful sponsors. Our show is sponsored by GoRaw and Universe Spirit, and their website is Job One for Humanity. It's all about facing the crisis that we're already in the middle of global destabilization. If you're paying attention, you can feel it kind of tremorous right under your feet.
I know, but there's global destabilization, then there's climate destabilization. Global destabilization could all be money-related, or it could be earthquake-related.
Did I say global?
Yeah, you said global.
Oh, interesting. Well, I think you could argue that this is an unstable global time.
And you should have known.
I should have known, no doubt about it.
Go Raw is 100% raw food that tastes so good you will eat it and not even know you're eating raw food.
And if you should find out that it is in fact raw food, know that it's been thoroughly made excellent for your digestive system. Your body's going to just whoop it up. And you're going to say, I should have known. No, I'm not trying to lay a guilt trip on you. I should have known is the featured phrase of the week. How many times have you said to yourself, I should have known? Well, why should you? Or even worse, someone else saying to you, you should have known. That's as bad as someone saying, don't you remember? I had someone say that to me today. I could feel they were annoyed. Well, do you remember we covered this 18 months ago? Anyway, my response, as I said, to both is, why should I? If I don't know, what makes me believe that I should have known? I'll tell you why. Because we've been invaded by a legion of shoulds. That's right. They've taken over much of our time, our decisions, and our predilections. You better pay attention to your predilections. You probably don't think about them very much, but tonight we're going to get you to reconnect with those predilections. And by the way, what is it to know anything? How deep can our knowing go? These are questions that need to be asked. I should have known. There, I did it again. Tonight, we're going to make a declaration of independence from the tyranny of the shouldies. Let us free ourselves from a shouldy life once and for all. Should have known.
Oh, well, I had a different take on it, but fun.
Good, let's hear.
I should have known. And I probably would have known, except I was much too busy playing here. But now that I am there, I knew that I should have known. See, it's all about time, and the past keeps jumping up and pestering me. I can't fix it, and I don't want to, because even if I should have known, I didn't. And this is where it has taken me. And I'm just grateful for the ride.
So it's gotten you this far. It's gotten you up to the gate of all that pass here. Be aware. Awareness awaits you. And in the awareness is the knowing.
And knowing is good.
But it's the knowing that you can't really use words on it. That's a different kind of knowing. Knowing that you can put words or numbers on them.
You can call it finite knowing.
Or there is the, I would assume, infinite knowing. That kind of knowing is you're discovering what it is as you're moving along. But wisdom, which is part of the knowing, suggests that you remember certain things from your experience so that you can more effectively guide yourself into the next moment with as little harm to yourself and others as possible and as much value as you can suck out of the moment.
I had this image as you were talking about being in a vehicle, like a chariot or a buggy, because you're exposed 360 degrees as you're riding along. Well, maybe a motorcycle too, but that goes real fast. Something that goes slower, and you're so aware of what's in front of you and what you just left. That's life. That's the way we live our lives. We're aware of what we left. We're aware of being aware, which makes us right here in the present. And we're looking forward, but you can see it down the road, getting there. It's all encompassing. It is 360 degrees, much more than just, you know, this right here, me, right this minute.
Makes me want to sing you a song. Chicks and ducks and geese better scurry when I take you out in the Surrey. When I take you out in the Surrey with the fringe on top.
That's
watch
sweet.
That road and see how it flutters. Anyway, no, my take.
Because he was wooing her.
Well, yeah, as he should be. That's his role.
But I felt like you were wooing me just then. Just a wee bit. You may
just
not
a wee
have
bit.
Noticed.
Well, we could go for a buggy ride. Father O'Malley, I thought of you. When's the last time you went on a buggy ride? Oh, a buggy ride. I like to ride in the buggy. Sometimes when I go out in the, what you call them now? They're the boondocks. And there's people still having buggies. And one time when I was in America, I went out to visit the Amish. And sure enough, they're still using the buggies. I got me a buggy ride. I hitchhiked right into one of those Amish buggies. And we bugged right along there in the buggy. And it was quite muggy as well as buggy because it's in the summertime and where they live can be quite muggy. But that's why it's good to have a buggy, to kind of ward off all the, well, the little bugs that get in your way and disturb your journey. I should have known you weren't going to go for that point of view there.
Blarney, Father O'Malley.
Yeah, the blarney. But the blarney's important, darling, because without the blarney, you'd be inclined to take it all way too seriously. A lot of people do there. They really get stuck thinking that their point of view and what they think they know is gives them their worth and their value and their reason to justify themselves living and not having the terrible thing come down. And then, you know what they do? I'm glad you mentioned it, Daryl, tonight. They hire a bunch of shooties. That's right. I'll be honest with you. The Catholic Church there, we should have known, but we didn't know, of course, that all the shooties we put on all those folks for all those centuries were going to come back to bite us. Well, thank you, Father O'Malley. There is a place where we should have known. I mean, it's a ridiculous thing to say because now there's no place for it. I take back what I just said.
Good. I'm glad.
It's like I went down that thought and I made that declaration. Then when I got to the end of the declaration and I looked out over the pit that was before me and it was just a deep, never-ending pit. And so I backed away from that precipice where I have encountered that point of view and went on to something else.
I'm so glad, because you should have known that there was going to be a pit there.
What?
I'll tell you something.
Are you going to tell me something?
In terms of shoulds, they don't take you anywhere. They take you into beating yourself up, feeling bad, whatever. It just doesn't seem to further. That's another reason for letting go of shoulds.
Okay, let's take a specific example of something. Let's see if we can understand it better. That's what we're here to do. You should make your bed. Let's say a mom says that. You should make your bed. So, should she make her bed? Is this a real shouldy or
well,
is this an appropriate should?
I would phrase it differently.
How would you phrase it?
Come, let's make the bed.
Isn't that interesting? You're not giving an order. You're inviting participation in something you are willing to engage in.
Because I want the bed made.
So you're taking responsibility mm-hmm. for what it is that you want, mm-hmm. rather than projecting that responsibility onto someone else who doesn't know, didn't know, and sometime in the future, when you confront them with why they didn't respond to you the way you wanted to now, they're going to say, I should have known.
Right. It's very difficult to exercise all the things that I believe in all the time. I feel so inadequate most of the time. I feel like I should have known better. Why did I do that? Oh, I should have known better about this. Why did I do that? Where's the rod? So I can beat myself up a little bit. The embrace of that should have known. It's going, okay, here I go again. Should have knowing. I didn't do that.
The should have knowing is transpiring once again.
Once again.
As it walks into the stage of our existence.
Taking over my consciousness.
Wanting a bigger role than it's been getting.
Well, it's not going to get it.
Sorry.
There was something you said, and I was trying to remember what it was.
Forget that.
I think so.
Trying to remember anything these days is really tricky. Like, I put something down here, 10 minutes ago, and by the time I turned around to say something to Rochelle, it was long lost in my mind.
But we discovered something. We lose things because we get distracted. We get taken away from the final moment of, I've put it here. Then I can go over there. So what happens is, I put it there and I'm already over there. I remember watching football games. They said he didn't keep his eye on the ball.
See, I always feel like I'm in a relay race and like I got to keep my eyes ahead and put my hand out behind me for the baton. But there aren't really a lot of batons that are being handed to me in that way. Hence, I lose things because I'm reaching back and it's not there. And then I turn around to look, and in the meantime, I bump into the thing that just showed up while I wasn't looking.
Errol loses so many things, he's finally decided to think of it as hiding them rather than losing them. So we have to say to him, where did you hide that?
And I hide things good. It's amazing. Like, we have this tripod that I'm using to videotape this thing. Man, did I hide that good from myself. You'd think I had this kind of demonic need to punish myself.
Ah, I should have known. That's what it was about, demonic need.
Oh, God. Think about your own demonic need. I've got a singer who's going to talk about a particular kind of should have knowns. This one is about should have known better.
Thank you.
That was Sufjan Stephen. I'm no doubt not pronouncing it correctly. I should have known better, Sufjan. But I didn't, you see.
There you go again.
That was another program we did. Tonight we're looking at should have.
Known.
I should have known. I should have been possessed of that information. If I had, then I would have not screwed up the way I did and caused such disarray or harm or frustration or whatever it is that I should have done right if I only had known.
You know, the greatest athletes, I always believe, make mistakes and immediately calibrate the mistake so that next time they can do it better. They don't go into, I should have known. They don't go into judgment. They just make an adjustment. To get to that place, you have to practice a lot. Because I should have known sort of gets you to a dead end. Like you're a dead end.
That makes me want to sing you another song, Rochelle. Dead end, dead end.
I should have known. You couldn't be too serious for too long.
You know, I cleaned bathrooms today. Come on. I was on it.
You're going to get special compensation for all that when you get to the other side. There'll be 40 virgins waiting for you.
All you bathroom workers, and especially those of you who clean your bathrooms too late, and you're saying yourself, I should have known. Because if I had known, I would have cleaned it sooner and avoided having to clean it in the extra special messy way that it is now.
Is that what you said today? Because it was extra messy because you hadn't cleaned it?
No. But it occurred to me someone who was living with the shooties. You know, there was one shootie, his name was Timothy Shooty. Oh, you know who he was, Barney? Timothy Shooty? Didn't he come stay with you for a while?
You did not.
Yeah, Timothy Shooty. He had a whole family of Shooties that came in. They all had the last name Shooties, but the first name was, you know, you should go out and make more money, and you should clean up after yourself. You should be nice to your little brother. You should not tear up your stuffed rabbit. You should be kinder to your spouse, is doing the best she can, etc. There's so many shooties, and they come in there, and everything like that is just dressed up in a shootie. They wear the shooties. You want to wipe them away sometimes and say, look, I can live with I want. If we could move the shooties into the I want category, that might make a difference. I'm even willing to expect have-tos, should-tos, want-tos, the have-tos. Certain things you have to, like I have to go to the bathroom. I have to breathe. I have to be able to support myself and my 16 cats, who are all very hungry all the time.
Barney, you're something else.
I love cats, and I don't want to go through life saying to myself over and over again, Barney, you should have had a bunch of cats. Oh, you should have had a bunch of cats. This way I can say, I got a bunch of cats.
Oh, well, that does eliminate the shoulds by doing what you should have done in the first place.
You meet it off at the past. I heard you say that
That's
once.
Right.
Well, you get to the past first, and then you're there first. So before they have time to drop there, you should have, you know, because you're already there, covering that past should have known thing.
I once wrote that the should, would, and could belong to the Ood family, and the Ood family lives in a fear house. It's always instilling fear in you. Would have, you should have, could have.
We'd like to give fear its honor due. Fear is having a ball. On this planet at this time, it is just doing great. What did you say as we were getting ready for dinner and the show tonight? The terrorists, they're being effective. They're terrorized us.
They have made us frightened. I mean, we're afraid to go here, there, or wherever. We're afraid of people who look different than us, who might be a bomber.
I got a question for you. Let's take a look at Donald Trump. This is July 2016, and the election has yet to occur. So we don't know. Don't tell us. Okay? I'm talking to you, posterity. Don't tell me. I don't want to know. I want to be surprised. But Donald Trump, what percentage of the backing of Donald Trump is fear-driven, and what percentage of it is, let's say, love-driven?
I think most of it is fear-driven.
Why would you say that?
Because of what he says. Listen to what he speaks of. He speaks of divisiveness. And so if people like that, then they too are fear-driven. His speeches, his rhetoric is all about the them, the bad people. The FBI said that Hillary Clinton did nothing illegal in her email stuff, but it was a little careless. He used the word careless, the FBI person. Donald Trump jumped on that right away.
Do you want a careless person for president?
A few weeks ago, Hillary Clinton said, do you want somebody who'll Twitter you and text you all the time and gets you so riled up? Do you want that man's finger near the button?
That is kind of scary,
something
isn't
like
it?
That. There's these two imperfect beings that are running for president of one of the most influential, I put it that way. I don't know the greatest or the smartest or anything else, but the most influential country in the world right now. Our music, our social norms reach out to everybody.
Not to mention our military. This is Senator Beauregard. I'd like to weigh in. By the way, since the last time I weighed in, I might have mentioned that I was growing a little portly. I've been able to lose some of that portliness, and I think part of it is because I'm facing the reality, which makes me sometimes quiver in my shoes, and I think I've lost weight by quivering. But I get out of it at the prospect of something like just that Donald Trump may be at the helm, but the whole repercussions of all this out-and-out divisiveness. Do we have a government for the people, or do we have a polarized constituency who's using each other to make themselves feel righteous with the delusion, and they should have known this, can I say, that somehow the righteous stance is going to protect them from all the harm and evils that are coming their way. It's not going to happen, no matter how much you should have known about it.
There comes a time in everyone's life when they feel like, whoops, I should have known. I should have done that. I should have gone here. I should have gone there. Because we are dissatisfied at any moment in time with the events that are in front of us. And we look back and think, oh, if I had gone that way, if I'd done this, if I'd made that decision, I should have known better, then I wouldn't be in this pickle that I'm in.
And even worse, a pickle jar. Surrounded by a bunch of other pickles. Or a bunch of people who are in the pickle.
Very bright.
You know, I know from Briny there. This is Father O'Malley.
Oh, you came back.
Well, just wanted to let you know about the brightiness of life. It's very much that way. Thank you. But what I wanted to point out is a lot of the you should have known and the guilt that's been laid on us is put there by our mothers.
Thank you.
that was the Beatles, reminding us your mother should know. Ain't that the truth? You grow up and you're thinking your mother should know.
And my mother usually did. At least she said she did. She knew a lot. A lot more than I. At least she let me know that all the time.
Good evening, this is Lord Umbridge. We're talking about knowing here. I often ponder with some of my pondering devices the whole phenomena of knowing anything. Something enters your mind and it finds a way into the synapses of your brain and registers some sort of association with something that had some meaning or context that you related to in the past that you can apply to something that perchance might affect the present or allow you to be more responsive there too. But the knowing itself is a series of images largely attached to language that builds up upon itself a certain body of, well, knowledge, actually. From that body of knowledge, you extract certain gems of it, and certain applicable aspects of it to a situation that seems to be calling for that body of knowledge. But sometimes we run into the problem where the particular set of knowing that you apply to what's happening is the wrong set of knowing. It's that point you're likely to say, oh my, I should have known.
But what is the wrong kind of knowing?
Wrong is really not the appropriate word here. I would say the less useful. That's the kindest way to say it. In the sense that if you're trying to open a door to get into your house, in order to do that, you're looking for your bowling ball. Well, I would say that you should have known better.
I think so, too, unless you're trying to break the door down. Instead of using a key, move up 10 feet and throw it.
Oh, the bowling ball. But see, in a moment of derangement, that could happen. And that's what scares us about your Donald Trump, is that he may have a moment of derangement, and he does have a finger near a button.
It's pretty scary. Oh, he said if the FBI exonerated her, as such it is, the system is rigged. His whole thing is that what exists right now, our government, is not good. Our government is good, but the people who run it are humans.
Fallible, I'd say.
And power-hungry and everything else, but he is just like that. And I can't see him making any changes whatsoever in that government because I don't think he is aware of running something. Everything he's really run has kind of gotten amok.
Well, I don't know that, but I would like to divert your attention away from Dunny Trump and call it to what's happened in the last 2 weeks. It's been an enormously influential thing for Britain, and that is we have exercised our Brexit option. We have left the European Union. And here I thought all these years the European Union was just a wonderful advancement in evolution at these countries that heretofore had been largely at war and now actually working together. But this is the early stages and there's bound to be some diversions and break-offs and trying to get it back together again.
There's once again, what ruled that decision? A lot of fear about immigrants coming in, taking over jobs, doing this, doing that. Instead of going, whoa, we've got all these people now in terms of who we are, where we're just this and now we're bigger. How do we manage each other? I mean, that should have been, they should have known better.
People feel disenfranchised, my dear. That's what they have in common across this little body of water between British and Americans. People feel disenfranchised.
Well, just between Britain and everybody else is on the other side of the channel. French and the Belgium and Spain and Italy, and they're all there in terms of Britain. But I heard something on the radio today that I thought was really touching and spoke volumes in terms of union. It was about dance. It was a ballet that When European Union existed, a certain amount of money was given to all these countries for the furtherance of the arts. Now there was cooperation between these countries in terms of artists. They could move freely without borders back and forth. They enriched the art itself because of it. There wasn't this, like, get a visa, you can be there for 2 weeks or 2 months or maybe even 2 years. But now you can work, actually work in a company that is not in your country and begin to absorb something more of that culture. This guy was practically in tears, this man who ran his ballet.
Because it wasn't going to happen.
Well, he just didn't see how. There was such an incredible interchange between artists that he was going to lose.
This is Professor Schnitzer. If I may jump in here, for us in Germany, we have sorrow, it's pragmatic and a little annoying, quite frankly. That leaves us holding the bag here as the strongest economic power. Now in the European Union, so people may look for us for handouts or hand up even. We don't know yet which way the hand will be facing when they face us. As long as they don't face it like the SS with the palms facing down and the elbows straight, because that would signify something that we do not want to repeat. Yeah? We are in Germany a little nervous about this, but we are ready to step in and see what we can do, what we can. Angela Merkel, our chancellor, said she had a deep regret over the UK's decision. But the remaining members of the EU should be, she says, willing and able to not draw quick and simple conclusions from the referendum, which would only further divide Europe.
That's it. What we about, you and I, Errol, I'm talking to you. We're so aware how love is about connection and fear is about separation and divisiveness. And that seems to just be what's feeding everything at this point in terms of large amalgamations, not individuals. Thank God. Don't have enough individuals to change the amalgamation.
Hope that all of you will send Angela your best and highest regards so she can lead with wisdom and courage.
Wisdom is definitely something we're short of.
Wisdom isn't cheap, as I understand.
It's becoming a rare commodity.
You have to work your buns off and do a lot of assimilating of what you know so that it is an upgrade into wisdom. Wisdom is an upgrade from knowing. So you have knowing, but the wisdom is getting above the fray. When looking at it and seeing the relationships between the phenomenon that is happening. Whereas knowing is usually just you're over here, you know about something over there. But wisdom, that's looking at the you, the knowing, and the knowing's reaction to you all at the same time.
I'd say it was like being above it, when you can be above something. And then you can see down, and you can see so much more because you're above it. You're not in the middle of it. And you might know that this is happening and know that that's happening. But when you reach above it, and you look down, and you see all the relationships, as you said, and all the interconnectedness of everything below you, and you realize that those connections make up the whole, that's a moment of wisdom.
This is Rabbi Greenberg. A moment of wisdom, man. It's not just you get above it, but your part of your mind is attuned to that which is interpenetrating everything. There's this thing that is like pervasive throughout existence, and it has its own knowingness. But it's a knowingness that isn't limited by over here and over there, because it's a knowingness that's everywhere all the time, and you plug into that. That's when you really develop some first-class, prime, number one wisdom. Yeah, you get wisdom that's a bona fide, card-carrying wisdom thought. That's what you want. Something like, what was it that you said, Errol? The thing you say at the end of every show. Let's say that. What is it? Oh, a resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more. There it is. You think that isn't like wisdom? That's wisdom, and it's wisdom because you get a little bit of perspective on a situation, so you're not so easily drawn in to identify yourself with that which is happening. Think, Rochelle?
There's nothing I can say other than I think so. I can't even say I should have known because I did.
I should have known. You were going to say all that, but I didn't.
I do a character called Madame Chanel.
You're going to give us a little taste?
No.
Oh,
it's just
on.
That because I say I channel. They think I'm a prophesier.
Sure. You're going to tell them what's going to happen.
All right.
Will I marry the blonde or the brunette?
Exactly.
Madame Chanel.
People are obsessed with knowing what's going to happen. There is an obsession about it. That's why we read our astrology. We want to know what's going to happen. And I think that I should have known that if I knew what was going to happen, it wouldn't make any difference whatsoever.
See, we're trying to head off the I should have known.
That's right.
And get there before it does.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it's very funny that we are really obsessed with, well, I want to know what's going to happen.
Well, why is that? You should know why. Because we are obsessed with having to control reality so that it fits with our comfort and our idea about what life should look and feel like. And so we think we can control it, but you can't really control it like that. But you can enter a place with your part of the big knowing. And from there, you get all the support of the entire rest of the whole thing is on your side to help you navigate your way through your life experience. Oh, it feels so delicious, so good. Maybe better than the apple strudel or Blintzes. It has a Blintzes feel to it, that kind of noise. You can smell the Blintzes. Your knowing is like that, Rochelle.
I did know.
Then there's this knowing that can torture your mind. Should have knowing.
The should that tortures your mind, the knowing doesn't torture your mind.
Here's a guy who wrestles with all that's known. Let's see what he has to say about it.
Litera multum ile. Et teris iactatus et alto, we superum, saevae memorem, unonis,
all that's known, in history, in science, overthrown, at school, at home, by blind men. You doubt them, and soon they bark and hound you, till everything you say is just another bad about you. All they say is trust in what is written. Wars are made, and somehow that is wisdom. Thought is suspect, and money is their idol. And nothing is okay unless it's scripted in their Bible. But I know there's so much more to find just in looking through myself and not at them. There's a way through this. On I go to wonder and to learning. Name the stars and know their dark returning. I'm calling to know the world's true yearning. The hunger that a child feels for everything they're shown. You watch me, just watch me. I'm calling.
All Unknown. That's from the Broadway musical Spring Awakening. Sounds provocative, doesn't it? He makes his comment, all that's known in history and science overthrown at school, at home by blind men. No doubt you doubt them, and soon they bark and hound you till everything you say is just another bad about you. All they say is trust in what is written. Wars are made, and somehow that is wisdom.
Well, I would say that that's a person who didn't believe that. Knowing is fun, because learning leads to knowing, and knowing leads to more learning ad infinitum. And then maybe after all that knowledge is accumulated, one realizes, what is that knowledge? What is it doing for me? Is it really improving my life? Do I feel more joyful? Am I more connected to people? Am I more in a state of love than I was before as a result of all this knowledge? Or has all this knowledge separated me? In that moment when we realize that the knowledge can, if we choose, bring us into greater union with each other, ourselves, and the source, that's wisdom.
That is wisdom. The knowledge is neutral.
When we get to that place, we have wisdom.
Let's just check in and see how the shitties are doing, by the way, to remind you, because we're going to need all the sustenance we can have to deal with these shitties. They're just everywhere all the time. GoRaw is our sponsor, and GoRaw provides some stuff that'll really wipe those shitties out of your system. We don't tell too many people about that, but it's so delicious and nutritious.
It's one way of looking at it. GoRaw. We have now a new motto for you. You can neutralize the shitties.
So we'd like to invite you to neutralize some of the shitties in your life. Maybe at least question them the next time you habitually respond to one of the shitties. Next time you have, in fact, a predilection to go with the shitty. Stop. Think about it. Matter of fact, think about the fact that we're in the middle of a huge climate crisis. And if you want to know more about it and really get the knowledge about it, go to Job One for Humanity.
There's a lot of information about it that you can access and maybe become more knowing.
We don't want to just get along here another 25, 50 years. We won't have the excuse of being able to say, I should have known, because we're being informed. Although some people want to keep it not informing it because it's not good for business, that damn global weather destabilization.
I heard this on the radio. I listen to the radio a lot when I'm driving because I like listening to all this information. It's the perfect time to do it when I'm in the car. You can listen to our broadcast the same way if you just download it. You can be driving and listening to this show. Instead of just sitting home, you can be driving your car to a nice destination. It takes over an hour and listen to the whole show, and you'll get there in no time.
No time at all. What our show offers is a way to reduce and eliminate time.
That's not totally true.
Because you will get there in no time. And you will experience no timelessness as well as no time. Because in the state of no time, it just is. It's the present. And this is the good news, that ever-present thing that's not conditional, that just keeps being here, there, that is what is really spirit. That is the substantive foundation of reality held in this exquisite, infinite phenomenon that is both quiescent and yet out of which can spring love, which in turn gives forth life. And then we enter life. And before you know it, no matter how innocent we are, we've bumped into, I should have known.
So think of our granddaughter. Will she be saying, I should have known at one point in her life? Right now, she's just there. She's just so present to what she is being led around by whatever's moving her from one place to another. Curiosity, obviously. Sensations and her senses. but definitely curiosity. Well, how? I want to know what that's that, and what about this? The other day, we were in the park with her, and she saw a frisbee, and you and Ian have been playing frisbee all the time. She obviously recognized that you do something with this, like a ball. She threw it. I thought, whoa, it won't be long before she...
She threw it right at another toddler, 1.5-year-old
no,
toddler.
No, she did not.
Knocked him right out, down for the count. But she was very caring. She felt really bad. She went over to
none
him.
None of those things happened.
Shook him.
He's telling us.
She even gave him mouth-to-mouth respiration.
Oh, God.
There we are, watching these two toddlers, 18-month-old toddlers on the ground.
Did not happen.
You know, the police were called because... People were getting nervous. It was a public...
How can you blatantly fib?
It went against the indecency laws because you can't have mouth-to-mouth activity publicly after you're 15 months old, as it turns out, is the law.
You're terrible.
I want to say something about the 4th of July that just happened yesterday and the celebrating of this year. I guess it's 240 years that we've made a break. Again... We do a disservice to the real day to celebrate. We don't celebrate it enough, and that's when the Constitution was ratified. This day is we're saying, hey, we're independent of this king who's usurping all our power and not let us do what we want to do when we want to do it. Bad man. And that's basically what the Declaration says. If you read it in its entirety, it's a lot of, king, you are really not nice.
There's someone trying to control you and your environment who is very far away from you, knows really nothing what's going on, and you're doing all the work and you're not getting the rewards, paying taxes and things like that that are not furthering your ownership in a way, ownership of the land. After a while, if you all own the place, you want to be free from the guy who's charging you all the money for it.
But imagine how difficult it was for them to wage war. Let's say they're in a battle and you're the general, General Howe or General Cage or somebody, and you want to get a decision from the king. You're right in the middle of the heat of the battle. But it's going to take a month for the message to get to England. And then it's going to take another month before it gets acted on, passed on, decided about, and then... another month to get back.
You have to be very patient in those days.
So there they are, all these guys standing with their muskets.
They should have known better.
Waiting for 3 months. Men just got hungry and died. Oh. They died of hunger from standing there, or their arms fell off. Oh, it's a very different time.
We get information now before it happens.
So we do know, and let's put it in for knowing. I think sometimes we disparage knowing. Knowing is phenomenal. What we know and what we're learning is amazing, and it's allowed us to accomplish so much. And we could put more emphasis on knowing this value stuff, stuff that can't be quantified. Much of our knowing revolves either directly or indirectly about phenomena that can be quantified, like money and the cost and how long and time and all this quantifiable activity. You want to give yourself a little rest? You want to take a real Sabbath? Spend a day, an hour, and let not the issue of quantity have any part, either as an actuality or even as a predilection. Back to that. And just see if you can sense the quality. There were like certain habits which favored spiritual growth, 7 of them, specifically from the Urantia book, which always resonated with me as being true. One was profound reflection on cosmic meanings. But the one I was thinking of just now is cultivated sensitivity to divine values.
That is extraordinarily intellectually challenging. For a lot of people, divine values, what does that mean? It's not definitive enough. The reason I'm bringing this up is that I realize that as you learn, it's like, what did you learn from that experience? When you learn something from an experience, you have knowledge of that. You've learned that, you've experienced it, you could follow it up with now you know.
I know now, when I go to make up a bed in the yurts, I fold the sheet over, but it's a little wrinkled. If I bring an iron with me and have it plugged in, ready to go, I can iron that wrinkle right out of the top of that bed sheet. Man, and that is so satisfying. I hope that the kind of knowing that each of us is acquiring is a knowing that's inherently expansive, not just for ourselves, but for everyone we influence.
I don't think you can know the truth and not share it, because it's not the truth then. It's just something you know. But it's the truth. You have to share it. It's too big to contain in one little body.
It's a living, dynamic thing. It's like a piece of music. You can't stop it and recognize it.
Now, while it's happening, you sure can't.
So immediately it's gone when you try and stop it. It's the same thing with life. I directed a show called Stop the World, I Want to Get Off, 3 times.
You got off 3 times, or you directed it 3 times?
Let me think.
I couldn't help myself.
I know I directed it 3 times. Okay, this is a little example of something that I think I learned from that. The first 2 times I directed it, I had one interpretation, and it was very successful. The third time, I arbitrarily decided, well, let's do another interpretation in a way to shape and focus the show. But it was out of my head. See, the first 2 times came out of my artistic, instinctive feeling. The third time, the choice to make it differently was a head trip. Not that I should have known it, but what I've learned from that is that that was, I hesitate to say a mistake, but it was a mistake in terms of the quality of the show, but it was not a mistake in terms of the lesson I learned from it, hopefully.
Which was?
Watch it when the head comes in and just wants to take over, when you're not trusting the heart and what's natural to your impulse, especially in the creative process.
Now, if they were on the same boat, the head and the heart, that would be even more powerful.
I think they are on the same boat, ideally, when the heart is the captain and the head is the pilot. The pilot is great at piloting, but it's not the captain. The captain is he who has the far-seeing vision of where we're going and be able to access all those other dimensions. You
That's
like it?
Yeah, I do.
For you, I'll give you a discount then if you like it.
Can I have 2 for 1?
Yeah, if you know what's good for you.
I love twofers.
I don't like the sales where you buy one, get the next one half off. It's like just enough of a...
No, it means 25% off.
But what if I don't want to?
That's true. If you don't want to, you're in trouble. Then you can't have it. And they always say that. 2 for 1, but if you buy one, it's a lot more money than if you bought 2 of them. So you're more inclined to buy 2 of them if you really want that. But if you don't really want that, it's immaterial.
Think of all the activities that are going on right now that are related to that phenomenon. As in, we want to try and get more for putting out less. But we're not like that here at Inside Out, The Naked Truth. We want to share as much as we can and encourage you to share as much as you can. And so please pass it on that we don't have to have shoulds in our life. Knowledge is forthwith and is available, and we're here for you. You can contact me at eastrider@gmail.com or go to our website, thelaughingheart.org, and find out about how you can creatively and playfully access that which is most relevant, most meaningful, most nurturing, and most fun. Put all those together.
Be like living with you.
Oh, you heard that here. We have our good times because every day I will fall over or break something or lose something, and Rochelle gets no end of mirth out of that. Bless her heart.
It's like living with a clown.
We're going to say goodnight now and talk to you soon. What do you have to remind us, Rochelle?
I want to remind you that resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more.
I should have known.